This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 7th of July 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Andrew Muller. Our guest reviewer this week is David Stubbs, veteran of Melody Maker, the NME, The Wire, and many other titles, and author of several books, most recently the acclaimed Future Days, Krautrock, and the Building of Modern Germany. David will be discussing an eclectic selection encompassing new works of ambient electronica, modern Glaswegian folk, and a collaboration from Long Beyond the Grave by Tim Buckley. That's all coming up here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. David Stubbs, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much.
I wanted to talk a bit at first, before we crack on with your selections, about your current book, Future Days, which is a history of Krautrock and with it a history of modern Germany. It's doing remarkably well. In fact, I suspect it's sold rather better at this point than many of the records you were actually writing about. Are you surprised by the reception it's had?
Yes, a little, but I think that the thing about Krautrock is it's like a kind of posthumous movement. I mean, in its day, it was absolutely kind of derided and, like, you know, only a handful of people would turn up in sort of various far-flung reaches of Germany to go and see these people. But practically at the moment the band's sort of fell to pieces in the mid to late 70s, it was then sort of taken up by the kind of punk, post-punk generation, people like Johnny Rotten, Mark E. Smith, Pete Shelley, who'd all been fans of the music. They'd all been kind of like, you know, one of the sort of rarefied breed of young, disaffected British musicians who were fed up with prog rock in the UK or whatever, and were dreaming of an alternative. So they were listening to things like Krautrock, Can, Faust, Kraftwerk, all these people, and dreaming of a new music.
It was a great exploration of what, you know, for the reasons you mentioned, had been a largely hidden history. Is Krautrock unusual in that, or do you have other ideas for future books, which also, I guess, in which a genre of music could be used to illuminate a wider cultural moment?
It's really hard, actually. I think it's... I was actually kind of racking my brains for something like this, and I don't think that there is really a great example of... This is one thing that attracted me to the book. There is this kind of narrative, really, you know, and Act One is like... the condition of post-war Germany, the cultural condition of post-war Germany, after the most kind of massive apocalyptic, one of the most massive apocalyptic events in human history, what that does to the country culturally, what the vacuum that it leaves. Act two, the kind of music that then sort of tentatively fills that. And then act three, it's kind of successive, it's the impact on successive generations of musicians because it's so innovative and futuristic because they're, you know, they're starting again with a clean slate. That's why the music is as inventive as it is. You know, the obvious, you know, example being Kraftwerk.
Yeah, a rather brutally cleaned slate as it happens.
Yes. I mean,
it was a literal year zero for Germany in 1945, wasn't it? Complete cultural, physical, political demolition of everything that had existed.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what is the imminent next project?
Well, I'm now working on something that is not at all pompously provisionally entitled The Meaning of Electronic Music. So it's a kind of history of electronic music going back to the late 19th century. But what I'm trying to do is look at it not so much in techie terms, but more in terms of the sort of hopes and fears, the dreams and anxieties that it kind of represented in terms of the people that were creating it and the people who were listening to it or who were revolted, you know, who were, you know, ran a mile from it, who were, you know, revolted by it.
Okay, well, to move us then seamlessly into the first of your selections, this is a band who's influenced by electronic music or krautrock, I think it's fair to say, is latent at best. This is Trembling Bells. Introduce them if you would.
The album is the Sovereign Self. What I found fascinating is it's part of this general trend in which folk music has now become something kind of very radical and even quite avant-garde, and it's almost like becoming very sort of punkish. I mean, there's a very sort of punk-like feel, you know, to this group. You know, there's, to me, there's kind of reminiscence of people like Susie and the Banshees, and even Polystyrene. I mean, traditionally, folk was obviously considered the most kind of reactionary and staid of kind of music, you know, knitted jumpers, fingers and ears, you know, pewter, real ale and what have you.
And it still kind of is in the hands of over-educated young men with over-large beards.
Yeah, yes, absolutely, indeed. But there is still, but it's actually become kind of quite sort of radicalised. And there's, you know, there's various kind of strands of activity. There's was that book Electric Eden by Rob Young, who's tracing its kind of sort of more kind of sort of radical eclectic traditions. And I think that is now being taken up. There's another group called Stick in the Wheel. I don't know if you're aware of them. And again, you know, a group like that, they feel punkish and they feel like they're sort of taking up folk. They're almost like, you know, taking up arms culturally and musically in the way that like punks did. And I think they're trying to kind of reconnect with a sense of place, a sense of a tradition of dissent and what have you.
Okay, well, let's have a listen to it. This is Trembling Bells with Killing Time in London Fields. Killing Time in London Fields by Trembling Bells. That's from their new album, The Sovereign Self, which is out on Tin Angel Records. That was the first selection of this week's guest music reviewer, David Stubbs. I can hear very much in that track that influence of Susie and the yeah. Banshees you mentioned. I mean, it's very evident, I think, in both the percussion and the vocal stylings. The thing you were talking about how Trembling Bells and similarly inclined folk influenced bands was having, you know, or had a certain, I guess, almost agit-pop edge to it at this point. Do you think that is something that is overdue a renaissance, or is it just that the culture has now changed and however conservative a government of the United Kingdom might get, that's just not going to happen anymore because it doesn't, music doesn't necessarily strike people as the most obvious weapon of anti-establishment revenge it once might have?
Well, yeah, I suppose, strictly speaking, I would kind of I'd incline towards the latter. I think that if there were actually a kind of sort of profound sort of social upheaval or revolution, you know, based on sort of increased inequality and gross disaffection, I don't necessarily think that music is the first thing that people would reach for or that it would be kind of soundtracked by anything like this. It'd be kind of slightly wishful thinking to believe that. I think this is more interesting perhaps in the sort of development and reception of folk music, something like this, than perhaps an imminent, you know, there being any kind of imminent prospect of insurrection, you know, led by kind of, you know, a return to the music of the land and what have you, an old Albion.
Well, I want to move along to your second selection, and I think there is a semi-seamless link here in that this is kind of a collaboration at least one remove of, I guess, somebody who was in his day sort of a folk music moderniser, that, of course, being Tim Buckley. This is the long-lost band. Explain, if you would, their link with the late, Tim Buckley.
The lyrics to the song that you're about to hear were actually written by this guy, Larry Beckett, who was a collaborator with Tim Buckley in the late 60s. They worked in a group together, I think it was the Bohemians or whatever. But he co-wrote, for instance, Song to the Siren, which is one of Buckley's most famous tracks. Now, this lyric, it was the last thing that they were working on just before Tim Buckley died in, I think it was 1975. And the stage it had been at is that Larry Beckett was kind of reading out this lyric to Buckley over the phone, and Buckley was kind of sort of working to some sort of musical setting of it and then sadly passed away. And what happened is this group from Liverpool, who, as all new groups should be, were, you know, great students of Tim Buckley, they kind of took up the cudgels. They decided to sort of create their own musical setting, you know, in sympathy with this lyric, you know, which was then completed by Beckett. And in fact, the whole album, I think, Larry Beckett actually works with them. So he obviously works with them on the sort of spoken word lyrical side of this album. I think they do a really good job, and I think they really capture that kind of Buckley-esque vibe, you know, literally vibe, that kind of vibraphone-soaked sound and those kind of sort of melancholy meandering kind of chords and what have you.
But, okay. Well, this is the Long Lost Band in cahoots with Larry Beckett and On the Hook. On the Hook by the long-lost band from their album One More Mile. And as our guest reviewer David Stubbs was just explaining, that was a collaboration with Tim Buckley lyricist Larry Beckett. And that was, in fact, a lyric that Tim Buckley was supposed to have recorded before he died in 1975. I mean, from the first chords of that and that first lyric about the gypsy woman drinking rum and coke, it sounds almost parodically like Buckley song. And I suppose that is to be expected. That's perfectly understandable. It's a reverent homage, though. But as somebody who I know is interested in sort of modernist futurist music and has written extensively about that, do you think that, I guess, music of that ilk, music sort of played on guitars with three or four chords and a recognizable melody, I mean, it is at this late stage, after sort of about 50 years of this recorded stuff, it can't escape its past, can it? It is doomed to carry all of this around wherever it goes. I mean, this was a point made very well by a former colleague of ours, Simon Reynolds, in his excellent book, Retromania.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I'm not one of these people that thinks that, that music's rubbish nowadays and it's all over and young generation absolute shower or whatever. I don't believe that for one second. But I do believe that, much as has happened with jazz, the narrative of rock has pretty much kind of come to a sort of natural conclusion. I think that happened with jazz as well, which doesn't preclude the possibility of, great records being made. It's just that they're never going to be sort of part of that kind of grand narrative. They're going to sort of be in the wake of that kind of grand narrative, constantly referring to it, finding new sort of possible interesting permutations and angles and directions. But I'd essentially agree with that. Although if you are going to go back and listen to Tim Buckley, then I think an extremist thing like Star Sailor from, I think, 1970, where he kind of does these kind of extraordinary kind of like vocalizations, is something that people might want to rediscover.
Although that name was ironically later appropriated by one of the dullest bands in human history.
Yes, with supreme irony.
your final selection tonight is an artist perhaps less bound by the strictures we've just been discussing. This is Gagarin. Introduce them if you would.
Right, well, it's actually a hymn, really. It's Gagarin is Graham Dowdall, who has been a sometime collaborator with people like Ludus, who used to work with Morrissey, also Perubu, whom he works at the moment, and Nico of the Velvet Underground. So he's got sort of really excellent pedigree. He started off as, he still is a drummer, but he applies himself to sort of electronics these days. And there's various things I find fascinating about it. I've seen him perform. That's the first thing. And if you listen to this music, you imagine traditionally, if you go back to, say, the 70s, that these kind of sounds would have to be achieved with kind of gigantic sort of banks, 20-foot high banks of light and stacks of synthensizers and whatever, and buttons, and what have you. And nowadays it can all be achieved on a sort of a small array of items, practically the size of an iPad. And it's astonishing. He plays live and he kind of flies around all these kind of various implements. And it's just astonishing the kind of sounds it can create with a very sort of small array of instruments in real time.
Okay, well, this is Gagarin with Aquaranda. That was Gagarin with Aquaranda, the third and final selection of this week's music reviewer, David Stubbs. David, three chords and the truth, Luddite that I am. I'm trying trying really hard to rise above the... Do not adjust your radio.
You were waiting for something to happen, weren't you? Philistine.
Yeah, there is not a fault.
No, ambient, nothing's... I mean, obviously, it's like an evocation. I mean, what is happening in a piece of music like that? I mean, it's very much tied up with the name Gagarin, obviously named after Yuri Gagarin, the astronaut. And I think it's like a lot of electronic music these days. It's actually sort of harking back to futurism's past. It's kind of alluding to kind of the hopes that people had of the future back in the sort of perhaps the earliest days of electronic music in the 50s and 60s or whatever, sort of tied in with like dreams of like lunar travel and what have you, and just generally hopes for some sort of like a better society with kind of great, with sort of broader horizons or what have you. I think that's, it's the sense that these futures were somehow lost along the way, and that music like this is kind of it's hankering back for that. Now that's something you're getting. That's a theme I think you're getting a lot implicitly in a lot of modern electronica.
Okay, well, Gagarin's somewhat annoyingly titled new album, AOTICP, or if you will, AOTICP, is out on the 13th of July on Geo Records. And that brings us to the end of today's show. David Stubbs, thank you very much for joining me. David's book, Future Days, Krautrock and the Building of Modern Germany, is available now. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Andrew Muller. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for this week's television review. But for now, thanks for listening.